down Simon Fraser campus, and they had problems down there, and the only way we could see ourselves dealing with them was to bring the center down to UBC. We didn't have any space for it. So I just picked up the phone and I talked to the academic vice president, Dan Birch, and within 3 days, as I recall, I had persuaded Dan that this was a very valuable adjunct, not merely to the faculty, but to the university. And indeed, the arrangement the center has is with the university rather than the faculty. And it's the university that has membership on its board rather than the faculty, although it's the dean who makes the recommendation to the university. But anyway, within 3 days, Dan Birch, on a handshake, had agreed to give us space and infrastructure to get the thing going. The center itself is unique. It's part of a series of institutes associated with the crime and drug control program of the United Nations, located in Vienna. Okay. And there are about 10 of them throughout the world, these institutes. And they do support work for the United Nations. They assist in organizing their crime control agenda. And they also engage in public policy research for the UN in certain instances. We didn't have anything like this anywhere in Canada before the center was created. And the center was created as an interregional center, an interregional institute, which means it's not confined to just doing work in the geographic region. It can do work for the UN anywhere, relating to anywhere. And this was a pretty big deal. And the Canadian government entered into a treaty with the United Nations setting up the center. So it's created by treaty between Canada and the UN, and the Canadian government is obliged to give it support.
Financial? Support.
Well, in the convention, it's not actually stated. Historically, it has been financial support. They have paid for the executive director, for example, ever since its inception. And on its board, it has a representative of the Attorney General of BC, but more importantly, it has a representative of the Minister of Public Security federally, the Attorney General federally, and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs federally, and UBC, Simon Fraser, and the International Society for the Reform of Criminal Law, which is one of the founding partners. They're all on the board. So it's a pretty high-powered board that's there.
Was it under the auspices of SFU originally?
No.
So it's always been.
This was arranged by some representatives of the Federal Ministry of Justice and me. We entered into an arrangement. And I might add, and also Don Sorokin, who is the treasurer now, secretary treasurer of the International Society for the Reform of Criminal Law. Okay.
So it wasn't just happened to be at Harbor Center because of,
it happened to be at Harbor Center because they offered space initially. Mm-hmm. And without going into any of the reasons, it became untenable down there. We got capitalization from the Law Foundation and the Law Foundation of Ontario and the Ministry of Justice at the beginning. So it was pretty unique the way in which it was set up and financed.
And do you have your own faculty?
We don't have faculty. We have our own staff, but we're a contract research organization. We did a lot of work at Canada's behest and Canadian government paying for it, towards the setting up of the first war crimes tribunal relating to Yugoslavia. And we've done a lot of work relating to the International Criminal Court. We've done a lot of work relating to democratization, rule of law, that sort of thing in China, in Southeast Asia, in Africa. It's been very interesting, been very good. The Canadian government, of course, has had a lot of benefit as a result of using us for these purposes.
And it's all run from here.
Yeah, it's all run from here. Yeah.
All on the same floor.
This is it. This is our boardroom. And we only have, of people on the ground at any one time. There's me, there's the girl at the front desk, there's Morris Copperthorne, a former ambassador. And Morris, you should talk to. I mean, he's been closer to the faculty longer than I have, Morris Copperthorne. Our executive director is Kathleen. She's been with us for 20 years, I would think now. Kathleen McDonald. And in the office next to me is Eileen Skinner. And Eileen is basically our work hog. She is one of these people who is an absolutely brilliant analyst and an absolutely brilliant report writer. But she doesn't like, that's what she wants to do. We would like to get her to do visible things, but she won't do them. She's great, long as we could keep her.
Did you go right from the dean's office into the International Center, or did you go back to teaching for
I taught for at least half a dozen years after I gave it up. I think it was 10 years after I gave it up. So far as the center's concerned, we also were lucky. We picked up a person whom I think is the best policy analyst in the country for legal international affairs, and that's a guy called Yvonne Dandurand. Yvonne Dandurand used to be with the Ministry of Justice, and he's currently one of the professors out at the University of Fraser Valley. And he's also very tightly connected, independently of the center, with the United Nations Crime Control Branch over in Vienna. So he works out very well with us, does a lot of our work. Otherwise, we just hire people, assuming we can get the money on contract to hire them.
And what relationship does it have to the law faculty? Is it
not close?
Not much.
No, not close. We're hoping with these new, younger international criminal lawyers that you're hiring that it will get closer.
I was also going to ask about the associate dean. You mentioned you had one.
Well, I had three associate deans during my period. Mm-hmm. They're all excellent. Jim McIntyre is a longtime member of the faculty.
I think we want to talk to him.
Oh, you should. Yeah. And he has all sorts of war stories that you'll like. Joost Blom, who became a dean. He was a dean for 6 years.
We're going to talk to him this afternoon.
Oh, good. Yeah. And he was excellent. And Liz Edinger.
She was
excellent. I was very lucky to have associate deans who could handle all the work that they had to handle.
Well,
what do the associate deans handle? Do they basically, do you delegate to them?
Oh, yes. They basically do everything relating to budget. They dealt with. Any faculty upsets, initially they would deal with.
Did you have them all at once, or do you have...
Oh, no. No, no.
They, they take turns.
Consecutively.
Okay. Yes.
What else did they do? Student and, you know, any grievances students had, they would deal with. And only if they couldn't resolve it. Yeah, we had a few that came to me. We had some instances where faculty were hitting on students, for example, that sort of thing. And in those cases, I had to deal with it. And, as you say, lay the wood to them. Happily, these were people who were in and out. Yes. The one thing we never mentioned. We used to have a clinical program during this period, a criminal clinic. Not the same one as you've got now, but this was quite a big teaching clinic. And it was very good. Students loved it. They all vied to get into it.
What did that consist of?
Well, they would get lectures, and they get lectures not merely by the profs, from the profs. And some of the profs, are quite significant in terms of what they've done subsequently. Frank Masco, he became Mr. Justice Masco, and just a guy who's a senior partner in a firm downtown whose name escapes me for the moment. But they became quite significant people in the law society or in the judiciary. And they would give lectures, and they would assign students to cases, and they would go with them and not hold their hand exactly, but the students would run the case, but they would be there ensuring that they were handling the cases properly, appearing for clients, and even sometimes not going there, and the students would be appearing for clients.
Why couldn't you call it an apprenticeship program, or was it the same?
That's a
same idea.
A negative term, an apprenticeship. I mean, that's so old-fashioned.
Okay.
You've been watching Garrow's Law, haven't you?
No, I haven't. No, I've had.
No, it was not exactly an apprenticeship. It was more than that, because they were getting theoretical classes as well. But for the most part, it would be an apprenticeship. They would be learning the nuts and bolts, learning how to do things, learning the procedure, learning the evidence, learning how you present the evidence, learning how you make submissions to the court.
Was someone we talked to, I'm trying to remember if they mentioned Mike Harcourt in relation to that. Or was he in a different...
I think Mike may have been one of... Yep, absolutely right. It was not that program. Jerome Attrins and Mike Harcourt created a downtown clinic.
Okay.
What was it called? Did they tell you what the name of it was? It had a specific name.
Tom Shorthouse mentioned it. And yeah. I can't remember the name.
This was before we had legal aid in any real sense of the term. But yeah, Jerome and Mike were responsible for setting up that downtown clinic to assist the indigent. But that was a different one. Ours was
different.
An academic clinic, quote unquote. It's only academic in the sense that it's attached to an academic institute, whereas it's effectively a hands-on learning experience.
And so it didn't have a particular ideological...
No, nothing like that.
And the students would go to law firms...
Law firms used to look for that in their vita. I'm sure they still do. Is the clinic still operating?
There's still the Law Students Legal Advice Program.
No, that's not what I'm talking about.
I don't think there is.
As part of the teaching program?
Not to my knowledge.
Oh, that's interesting. No, the Law Students Legal Advice Program was there from the year dot. It was pretty good. Yeah. You should talk to that chap.
Who was that? Frank Masco?
No, Frank Masco, you can talk to him about the clinic, but I'm thinking, and I think that Jerry was the name of the other guy. Jerry Zizkraut. That's who it was.
Zizkraut.
Yeah, he's a partner in one of the firms downtown now. Jerry was a real energetic guy. He got lots done.
And he was a graduate of the
of UBC, and he taught in the clinic. And I have a feeling that there was one other teacher I should draw your attention to, and I've forgotten his name. Now, there's a guy who retired last year or 2 years ago as the director of the ELSE Lab.
Brian
Higgins, yeah. Good guy.
This
absolutely
year.
Perfect person for that. Yeah, you get the wrong person as a director, as the director of something like that, and it's dead. Higgins was absolutely perfect.
So it sounds like the